Please be advised that this interview contains some language which may not be appropriate for all audiences.
Regular show is a raucous, goofy comedy, but it's very emotional. And at its core, it's a story about people, about a group of friends who actually really like each other. And they get frustrated with each other, like we all do with our group of friends, but they all really like each other. Like, Benson threatens to fire Mordecai and Rigby all the time, but they always have their job back because it's a sitcom. You have to keep that cycle going. They always stick up for each other. They always have each other's back. And they like hanging out with each other. Even when they annoy each other, they like hanging out. That show is about friendship and it's about love.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Regular Show Wiki's 15th anniversary interviews. Today's guest is a writer who penned the only Regular Show novella in existence, Shakespeare in the Park. Please welcome Gabe Soria.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for pronouncing my last name correctly.
we'll start from the very beginning. How did you get into writing in the first place?
Well, okay. Let's go for it. I've been writing since I was a kid. I've wanted to tell stories ever since I was a very, very young man. And my mother, Bunny, she encouraged me from an early age to just write whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, and encouraged me to just be as creative as I possibly could. So as far back as, junior, senior high school, I was thinking about writing as a career or just something I wanted to be involved with. And I first started writing professionally, semi-professionally, when I was 19. I started writing for a music magazine in Los Angeles, where I was raised, a music magazine called Fizz. And I started off writing interviews with bands and things like that. All through junior and senior high school, I wrote fiction. I wrote like attempts at screenplays here, short stories there. But it wasn't until I was 19 when I really started thinking about, oh, I'm going to write. And that's when I began. And that's how I got started writing. And I'm still here doing it. Many years later.
And of course, you've done a lot of writing with comics as well.
Yes, that is my main mode of writing nowadays. I write comics and graphic novels. I have shelves behind me somewhere that has a bunch of the stuff I've written. I tend to lose count now. Not bragging. I just like kind of constantly. I'm busy, like trying to survive. I've written quite a few graphic novels. I've done a lot of prose stuff. I wrote a series of Pick a Path adventure books for Penguin, which called Midnight Arcade. There were four of those. I wrote a graphic novel with my great co-author Jessica Abel back in 2008 called Life Sucks, a young vampires working in terrible night jobs in Los Angeles book, which was published by a company called First Second, and back then, and which was recently republished a few months ago by Fantagraphics. I do a comic book called Mega Ghost with an excellent artist named Gideon Kendall, and that's being published by Dark Horse Comics now. And golly, I wrote a I don't know if you want the whole CV here, but most recently, I wrote a graphic novel called Murder Ballads, which is kind of a more adult noir sort of thing that had a soundtrack by my friend Dan Auerbach from the Black Keys. And I published a new graphic novel with DC Comics, who I wrote a lot of Batman 66 for. This new graphic novel is called Jimmy Olsen's Super Cyclopedia, and I did it with my amazing collaborator, Sandy Gerald, and hopefully that's doing well.
So we'll get on to your regular show book How did that first come about? And were you aware of Regular Show beforehand?
Okay. I've been a huge fan of Regular Show ever since I discovered it on Cartoon Network. I wanted to write this so badly. This book started off actually as a pitch for an original Regular Show graphic novel. I was trying to get Boom to do it as a graphic novel, and I got no traction there. Zero. I did end up writing some Regular Show comics for Boom, and that's a whole nother story entirely. You've never seen them because they were never published, but there is a whole Regular Show comic that just lives on my hard drive. That was we can talk about that later if you want to talk about it. But it's a fun, very short story that exists as my script and hastily lettered pencils. And it's still, I just looked at it recently. It's still pretty funny, but we can talk about that later. But Fakes in the Park, I was just, since I had no luck with getting Boom to go for it, I didn't understand what they were looking for. I happened to mention it to my fantastic agent, Charlie Olson, and Charlie mentioned that he knew the folks at Penguin Random House, at Penguin Workshop, who were doing Regular Show tie-in books, and he pitched it there for me. And to my surprise, they went for it. They said, "Yes, let's do it." And then I had to figure out how to write it as a novel or a novella, and I basically approach it as if I was writing a half hour Regular Show special. And so I was just so jazzed to be able to contribute something to the Regular Show universe, because I really cannot overstate how much I love Regular Show. To this day, it remains one of my favorite television shows of all time. I think it is one of the greatest workplace comedies on television. And that, I mean, I put it up there with The Office. I put both British and American. I put it up there with MASH, which, when we boil it down, is just a workplace comedy. I think it is just it's wonderful. It's wonderfully written, incredibly well conceived. I love the fact that it has so much heart. It is one of the most heartfelt just tributes to friendship I think you will ever see. And with all that, it's just hilarious. It is like one of the funny, like I can watch any episode of Regular Show right now and find something to just like to fall out laughing to. And it's just wonderful. So yeah, that's how I got in to do Fakes in the Park. And until you said it, I was unaware that it was the only novella, the only Regular Show novella. I had no idea.
Yeah, there were a total of, I think, 16 books for Regular Show. There were a few that told a narrative from start to finish, but there was one which was a collection of short stories, and there was one which was like just a big picture book. But this is the only one that's like a full-on novella. And that caught my surprise when I got it. I mean, you mentioned that this was like in your mind as like it could be a half-hour special for Regular Show. That's like kind of how I see it, although I kind of thought it'd be like a 30-minute special or a 44-minute special because there's so much in it that could be great.
I would have taken whatever. I would have said, "Okay, please, like give me an hour." And when I was writing it, I was really thinking of my favorite. Like, it's okay, it's hard choosing a favorite Regular Show episode because they're all so good. But I was really thinking a lot about what I had to be my absolute favorite episode, though, is, and that's the Christmas special. It is in my regular rotation of things to watch at Christmas. My family and I, We watch it every Christmas, at least a couple times. I can mention a line to one of my kids, and they will just like, you know, boom. Like I'll say like Santa's got a six pack, and one of them will respond, "Rumpa-pum-pum," and you know, the Skips thing about fighting a bear, fight a bear, don't lose. Like, it's just like that whole episode is just fantastic, and it's a great Christmas episode. I mean, so I was really thinking about that when I wrote Fake Spirit in the Park. I'm like, oh, how could I write something that could possibly hold up next to that? And I don't know if I got to that level. I never got a call from J.G. Quintel or whatever offering to hire me. but, hey.
But, I mean, like, when you read the book, you automatically get the sense that you understand the characters. Every line that every character says, like, just read it in their voice, and, like, it's so natural.
Please, go on. I'm susceptible to flattery, please.
So, yeah, so what were kind of your main inspirations behind this book then? Because obviously there's a very heavy kind of Shakespearean influence on it.
Well, I'm a Shakespeare freak. I'm a Shakespeare freak. I have it's quite hidden right now, but I have a whole shelf of plays and ancillary Shakespeare books back there, many of which I owned before I started working on the book. I'm just a, kind of a freak about Shakespeare. And I really wanted to write a Shakespearean play. I wanted to write a play in the mode of Shakespeare and see if I could do it. And one day it occurred to me, oh, this sounds like it would be a ridiculous thing. It literally occurred to me, like, oh, what if Rigby got possessed by the ghost of Shakespeare and he wrote a Shakespearean play? What would he write? And thus was born, like, basically the idea of the book and the idea of the play within the book, which I am still surprised that Penguin let me do. They let me put, like, insert a play in the middle of a prose novella. And they were like, yeah, my editor on the book, this amazing guy, Carl Jones, he was unfazed. He said, yeah, let's do it. Let's go for it. And there it is. And there's actually a longer version of that play that I have. Like, some bits got cut out for the print version. But there's one monologue was cut from the book version. But I have that lying around somewhere.
Well, I think that especially, the blend between it just being a regular novella and then it goes into being a full-on screenplay, I love that. I think with the Shakespeare actually being in it as well, when the scene comes along that Skips is like, oh, we've got to meet my old friend Wild Bill, but you might know him as William Shakespeare. I was like, of course Skips was roommates with William Shakespeare. It works.
Of course. Of course. Yeah, that was it. Like, Skips is like, he does that in the show all the time. Like, just kind of, I'm going to drop this little thing. Like, kind of like, and like, just kind of leave it at that. Like, oh yeah, it's my old guy. Like a bit, like, you know, and Skips can, like, make friends with anybody. Like, that bit in the Christmas episodes when he, like, mentions, like, you know, they're saying goodbye to Santa Claus at the end. It's like, let's go bowling sometime. Like, I can believe Skips is that type of dude to be like, yeah, I'm going to go bowling with Santa Claus because he's the man.
It's one of the things that I love about the kind of extended universe for Regular Show with the books and the comics and everything. It's just these little droppings of lore that comes in. And I'm sure there's people who will say, like, oh, it's not canon. It doesn't matter. But to me, I mean, I like to think that everything's still connected in one way or another. And if something contradicts itself, the end of the show establishes there's like a million different universes anyway.
It's like The Simpsons, you know, like, there's how many years have there been of The Simpsons? Like, it's like 30 years now, like around that. Might actually be longer because I remember first watching the first episodes on the Tracy Ullman show when I was in high school. But so all of that is canon, basically. So why can't all this stuff be canon? Like, it's a cartoon. Like, we're gonna like throw it all in. It's all like everything's all happening at once. Who cares? It's great.
So the idea of them being old friends, old roommates, can you remember when that kind of idea came along?
No, I can't remember when that idea came along, but when it came along, it just made perfect sense to me. Just like it, this was a book when I was writing it, like everything is kind of slotted in. Like, oh yeah, that's oh of course, like that, like a of course Skips would know Shakespeare. Of course, the play Rigby and Shakespeare would write would be like Die Hard-esque, Lethal Weapon. Buddy cop action comedy, of course, because that's what they're into. Like, it felt kind of like everything. This one kind of came easily, which a lot of writing, there's a lot of folks out there know a lot of writing does not come easy. A lot of writing is like drawing blood from a stone. I was still, it still took a lot of effort to do this thing, but the plot elements kind of fell into place, like almost like they had been in, like they were already there. I know that sounds kind of, a bit kind of, but yeah, it felt like I was, it really felt like I was transcribing a regular show episode when I was writing this. So hopefully I got it right. Knock wood.
I think what I would say is the worst thing about the book is the fact that it's the only one. It's the only, like, the fact that there haven't been more. Because actually, this was one of the last regular show books that Penguin did. I also love the kind of semi first person perspective that it's written in, where now and then it'll say, I'm not sure what you call them, but like the kind of narrator of it has a personality as well.
Yeah, I tried to like try to do that where it felt like, you know, like it felt like somebody telling you a story. It felt like and like and but a fallible person. And yeah, that was intentional. Like they let me do that too. Let me just kind of like because I wanted that to feel like maybe the course in a play was doing asides, like a how like you know in a play by Shakespeare sometimes the course the person the narrator like. Let's say like the narrator of Henry V or Romeo and Juliet like would constantly would make not so much asides but they would address the audience as if they were the narrator of a book and I was like oh take I thought take that a little bit further and like say I you know why not you know go wild could do anything with it so whatever man.
There's also some, it feels like a little bit of a video game influence on the book as well. There's the game, one of the witches plays Witch Wars at the beginning, and then later on you've got the whole arcade showdown between the park and the East Pines.
Yeah, you gotta have Gene in there. You gotta have Gene in there. Come on.
So when you were writing those, what games were you thinking of?
Holy smokes, you are going way deep here. What would I have been thinking of? Well, I was, you know, in my mind, the system that Mordecai and Rigby play. When they're like, whenever they're playing a game on the show, they're playing a Super Nintendo. That's not a Mega Drive, as you Brits would call it, not a Sega Mega Drive, but a Super Nintendo. They're playing they're it's not NES, it's SNES, and they like, you know, I there are a few games which I think of constantly. I think of, you know, there's so many good Super Nintendo games, but you know, I thinking like they're playing or what I would what I'm thinking of with their type of stuff they're playing is maybe all-time classic Metal Warriors. It's a Konami game, fantastic side scroller where you like you play a, you're a mech pilot. You can pilot mechs around but jump out of them as well. Zombies Ate My Neighbors, classic LucasArts game. Any of the Super Star Wars games, the notoriously hard side-scrolling Star Wars games, the Indiana Jones game that was done like the Super Star Wars games, in that same mode. Lordy, lordy, lordy. I'm going off on a tangent here, but I'm thinking, what would Mordecai and Rigby play? Maybe Kirby's Dream Course as well, one of the all-time greats on that. But that's what I'm like. Those are probably those games I mentioned, the games that like have stuck with me, and I still think about a lot to this day. I still own the first Super Nintendo I ever got when I was like 19, 20 years old. I still own that. It still works. It's very clean, and I still own a lot of the games. So that's what I'm, that's what I think that they would be playing. That's what I think. That's what I was thinking about too while I was writing the book.
I want to ask, have you played the regular show game?
I believe, because there's a regular show 3DS game, right?
Yeah.
I have that around here somewhere. It's all right. It's not to disparage anything, but like, it's fine. It's fine. It's a tie-in game. It's good. Like, I wish there were more. And are there any other ones? Okay, refresh my memory.
There's a bunch of Flash games, and there were mobile games, but that was the only like proper video game that was released.
Yeah, I have that somewhere around here. I really wish that, Regular Show lives. Regular Show is not forgotten. And I believe it's eternal. And it's one of those things that I hope gets revived in more ways. I look, they're making new Adventure Time comics now. I believe there could be more Regular Show comics. Why not a new Regular Show game? Like, in my mind, the Regular Show game, one that has to be made is one of like a side scrolling beat 'em up, like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles games. Like the ones where it's like kind of a not quite three quarter perspective, not quite side scrolling, but a little bit of perspective where like the characters can move it. I mean, come on, where they're just like moving like up to four players, just moving like kind of like a what are some other games in that mode? I think there was an X-Men game kind of like that too. But like we're that would be like there's nothing stopping people other than lack of money and hopefully not lack of interest and hopefully Cartoon Network not just sitting on the rights and saying we don't want to do anything, but we're not going to let you do anything. There's nothing stopping folks from making a fantastic retro 16-bit regular show side-scrolling four-player beat 'em up, a la Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Lost in Time or a similar game. And other regular show stuff. I long for a regular show soundtrack release. I long for a single of Summertime, Summertime 11. I mean, come on. Like the world demands it. Please, like regular show wiki viewers and readers, like let's start talking to folks and like get that out there. 'Cause how many great regular show songs are there besides Summertime Lovin'? God, like I can't all the fist pump songs, all the other bands that would appear in the show. God, that'd be a great soundtrack.
And the background music as well, the
Oh
score.
yeah, the score would be fantastic. Like I can hear it like in my head right now. It's yeah, everything about that show. Jeez, I hope J.G. Quintel is doing well right now, and hope I know like there's something about like a regular show revival happening soon
Yeah.
or something. All right, can you tell me about it?
So we don't know a lot of details, but it was announced last year at an animation festival that there's a new revival that JG's working on. And yeah, details are very scarce at the moment.
I mean, I love the other series he did for HBO. Was it Close Enough? That was so very different, but fantastic. But I want some more regular show myself. I want some more movies, regular show movies. Yeah, what else you got? What else you got for me? This is great. I love talking about the regular show. I love it. It makes me want to just get, put this down and go watch some episodes right now.
Well, you were just talking about the soundtrack. And I think there is a possibility that could come along because just a couple months ago, they finally released the whole show on DVD.
What? Wait. How did I miss that? Because I searched for that.
Yeah, it was very scarce. There was no official announcement or anything, but it's out there now.
Like I literally want to hang up on you right now and order it because that is because you know I have a few DVDs like the scattered stuff they would release and it's like oh, I just want it the thing I want the whole thing so it deserves a whole thing that's fantastic news oh my gosh I'm like yeah I'm doing that right it's like I don't I'm doing that right when I get off I'm seeking it out and finding it.
Hey everyone, we're just going to pause the interview here for a moment as this feels like the perfect moment to announce that in celebration of the show's 15th anniversary, we are conducting a giveaway for free copies of the Complete Series DVD box set. To enter, simply go to our Instagram at regularshowwiki and click the link in our bio to answer the following question: Which of the following characters did not appear in Regular Show the Movie? A. Margaret, B. Eileen, or C. CJ. A winner will be chosen at random from all participants who answer correctly. Please make sure that you are also following our Instagram account so that we can contact you if needed. The competition will end on September 6th at 12 a.m. GMT, with the winners set to be announced later in the day as part of a special celebratory podcast. Terms and conditions apply, which can be found on our Instagram. Good luck. But now, back to our interview with Gabe Soria.
Now that that's finally happened, and that's something that people have been wanting ever since the show ended. I mean, the show ends with sort of a promise of a box set one day. And it's taken us 8 years to get to that point. So that's a possibility for them to maybe release a soundtrack one day. They've done it for other Cartoon Network shows.
Oh yeah. I mean, like there, I've got the soundtrack for. Well, no, it's not Cartoon Network. So sorry to compare, but I mean, Gravity Falls has a great, great deluxe soundtrack. So, Gravity Falls can do it. They can do one of Gravity Falls. I mean, it's a Disney thing, so different, whatever. But I would hope that regular show could get the thing that it deserves, which is now box set and. A soundtrack release and but I really just want a summertime love and single something with not even a really good sleaze something that looks like and like a it could have been made in the 80s that's what I want like a single like this just something like this maybe a promo a summertime love-in.
So we'll move slightly back onto the writing side of it. So when you sit down and you start writing something, what is your writing process like? How do you compose a story?
Oh God. staring at the walls. That is usually it. A lot of my work is done at inopportune times on my phone when I get an idea inconveniently. There's sometimes I just look to get stuff done, I have to sit down at my computer and just type. But I have many different writing implements around. I have a notebook I use my notes app. I'll do this, whatever on my phone, like notes on my phone. Like I said, my computer. And you're not really asking for advice, you're just asking for what I do. I stare at all the books around me and I think about how every single one of them, there was a person behind it who was thinking just like me right now, thinking, I'm terrible. I'm a fraud. I cannot write. I can't believe I told somebody I would do this because I'm completely incapable of doing it. And then I open up a document and I start typing. And sometimes the words come out like I'm like, oh yeah, I could just do this, I could do this. Sometimes they're very halting, but I sit there and I well, actually one of my the biggest thing is I make a lot of notes. I do lots and lots and lots of notes a lot before I write a lot of things. Sometimes things just kind of come, I can do it. But if there are any aspiring writers out there, or people who just want to hear my like kind of half-assed my half-ass advice about writing. Make a lot of notes. Notes are free. Notes harm nothing. Do research. You don't get lost in research, but do it. Just check out tons of books in your library. Use your library. Use your library. Support your local library. Research tons of different stuff. Watch tons of different movies. Just read anything that could possibly be related to the type of thing you want to write. You will get ideas from the weirdest places. And to write effectively, especially nowadays when there's so many distractions around, like, I can just kick back and watch streaming television or do whatever right now. Utilize that to your fa in your favor. Just get as much, surround yourself with as much stuff that is kind of like or just totally unlike the thing you're writing, and just start caught, like, start mashing it all together. That's what I do. I'll take something from here, take something from there, and before I know it, I have an idea for a story. We need if you have if you just have a paragraph, write that. If you have a paragraph from some other part in the story, just write that. Cut and paste is one of the greatest things in the world. Like being able to assemble a story on a digital thing from this thing you wrote here, this thing you wrote there. That's how I do it a lot of times. Sometimes I'll just write something straight through, but a lot of times I'm like, ah, let me get this part. Then before I know it, I have a story, or I have a comic, or I have a pitch for a new thing, or whatever. So that's kind of my writing process. But a lot of staring at the ceiling, a lot of staring at the walls.
It's interesting when you say that, especially about the cut and paste thing, about how that feels kind of like maybe that was implemented a little bit into Shakespeare in the Park with Rigby or Shakespeare or Shakespeare develops a story from just watching this new movie.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. It's like being like a magpie and just taking all the things around you that you love or the things you've seen, and just putting them all together. And then all of a sudden you have a weird amalgam of all the things that you love or the things that you are that influence you, and you've made something new all of a sudden. And that's exactly what this book kind of is. Like, Shakespeare and Rigby come together, their personalities come together, and they have different ideas and interests, and they meld that together into this like kind of chimera of like weird action movies and quasi Elizabethan playwriting. Like, hopefully I got close on that.
Deaths in this story as well.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
When you write a regular show story, it's kind of, I feel like it's mostly expected that there's going to be a certain set of characters, just the main characters, but then when you start delving into the more sort of supporting characters like Death and like Jean as well.
The reason was, and I remember like thinking about this when I was writing it, was the feeling that this might be my only opportunity to write a regular show thing. So I wanted to put as much of what I loved about regular show into this one thing, because if I didn't put it in there, I might never have the opportunity again. So that's why I put like Death in there, because I love Death, because he's funny, he's weird, and it's basically like writing Lemmy. It's like basically like writing Lemmy from Motorhead.
Who I believe was a big influence behind the character as well.
It had it,
If it
he
didn't
has to have
show
been.
already.
Yeah. He has to have been. So that was why I put Death in there. And Death is a part of like, the concept of death, and is very Shakespearean. Well, there's a lot of dying in Shakespeare, so I had to put some death in there. Who else is in the book? Let me look at the cast of characters. I put Thomas in there, of course. And I invented new characters. Like, I love CJ and Eileen. Did I get Margaret in there? I don't think I got Margaret in there. But I got to invent new characters, the Merry Players, like the roving band of Shakespearean actors, like in Larry the Laser Wizard. Which is, yeah, it's like I had to add my own like regular show-esque touches to it, But yeah, so I just wanted to cram it full. I wanted to be like a crazy movie where every guest star you can imagine was in there. If I could have gone longer, I would have put more folks in there. I would have put Margaret in there at some point. I would have done like a. I probably would have put Rigby's brother in there. I would have. I would have put the baby ducks in there.
Another thing with the book as well, with it being the only regular show novella, it is unfortunately the only regular show story where the only visual representation that it's got is the cover. But you mentioned earlier on how this was originally an idea for a graphic novel. Were there any sort of visual representation for the different new characters that you brought around?
I did not actually. I just it was never asked of me, so and the cover was done very beautifully by JJ, but I wasn't really consulted on the cover. Like they showed me the cover afterwards, and I was like, oh, that's great, it's fantastic. JJ did an amazing job. So I was never asked to come up with like any ideas for what these folks would look like. And I would wager that would be outside of Penguin's purview to like illustrate new characters and something like this, but they might have been being cautious. I have no idea. And in the comic, I'm sure there were in the Boom comic, I'm sure there were new characters thrown in there because you would have to after a while, just to keep it fresh and keep it fun. So if anybody out there wants to do fan art of this thing, I would love it. And if anybody out there ever wants to perform Macbeth, the play within Fakespear in the Park, I would love that too. I would love to hear about it. Please do it. Please, please, please.
Well, it's another thing I was thinking of is that this story would also be very appropriate to be like a regular show stage play.
From your lips. It still exists. It's still good. And like I said before, I'm just really astounded and touched that you reached out to ask me about this because you're the first person to ever interview me about this, and it's incredible to me that it's still like lighting people up. I wish it were still in print. I mean, you can get used copies of it like fairly easily, I guess, but I missed out on getting a bunch of copies. This is my only copy. As far as I know, the entire stock that Penguin had was like sent to Cartoon Network or pulped or whatever. So if I want any more copies of this, I have to go to find it secondhand on the internet. I just wish I could find a box of them so I could take them with me to the very when I very seldomly do conventions because I would love to hit people to this at some point. But hey, like I said before, though, I do have a, I have I made like some zines of the unexpurgated version of the play. I cooked that up. I have that around somewhere, and I might make a few more just copies of it just to have around to hand out to people, free, take them. And yeah, so. I'm touched that you have a copy.
I was aiming to get every regular show book. I only finished my collection last year.
I've got to start doing that. 'Cause I just got It's a Wonderful Life picture book. I just got that this past Christmas, and I was like, I should start getting more of these together. I have the anthology book, which is like three Tales of the Park, or whatever, something like that. I have that around somewhere, and I have like a couple of the. Like there's that one book you kind of write yourself, you fill in stuff, or it's like an activity kind of book. But I should start researching the other ones too, because I would love to have those in my collection. I would love to have some regular show memorabilia. Like I'm not an action figure guy, but golly, would I be into having like a Mordecai action figure, Mordecai and Rigby action figures on my desk here, staring at me.
If I had them on me right now, I'd show you the ones that I've got, but I'm not. I haven't got them with me right now.
Did they make any like figurines or anything like that?
Oh yeah, they made a good number. They're not great, but they're still fun to have.
Oh, yeah.
Not to shamelessly plug the wiki itself, but I mean, this is for the wiki. So if you want to find resources on where the books are, the wiki's got a full list of them.
I love to hear that. I love to hear that. You know, and remind me that I have to send you like a, because I did want to talk to you a little bit about like the unpublished regular show comic that just it's a comic that exists that I wrote and was illustrated by a friend of mine, this amazing illustrator named Nate Doyle. And we basically, it was a kind of a semi regular show parody tribute to Charles Schulz's Peanuts, where, and the comic is all about Mordecai and Rigby being really into this new comic strip in the newspaper called Regulars. And I can't remember where I put the apostrophe in there, like a REGL apostrophe R. Anyway. So the comic is presented with them reading it, and Muscle Man comes in and he's like interested. So they're showing him their scrapbook of all the regulars things they've cut out. And there's some like there's some stuff in there, but basically what happens is that Muscle Man realizes that Mordecai and Rigby don't realize it, that the comic strip they're reading is actually them. And Muscle Man clues in on it, and he basically ends the strip, the comic, by yelling at and threatening the authors of the comic book story, which is who are me and Nate. And we're just like both kind of freaked out that Muscle Man is yelling at us through the comic. And it's weird and it's meta, but it's really fun. And Nate did an amazing job of doing like kind of a the strips themselves. They're presented in the comic as like pasted into a scrapbook, and they're very kind of they're much a Charles Schulz tribute. And you know, instead of Mordecai, the Mordecai analog in the regular strip is named Morty Blue, you know, Charlie Brown, Morty Blue, and it's just like this goofy stuff like that. And it's sad it was never published. And that's a whole different story that I'm not going to get into, but it exists. And one day I'd like to for it to see to be out in the world. You know, who knows? So, yeah. That's my one bit of weird regular show trivia that I was privy to, and now you know. So there you go.
So that kind of answers one of the later questions I was going to ask because of your comic history, if you were ever interested in writing for the
Oh,
comics.
yes, I was very, very interested.
So within, well, I guess both stories which you've written for, who would you say is your favorite character to write for?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. You know, I think I like writing for, and it's pretty obvious, but I like writing for Mordecai and Rigby. And I would count them as like one character because they are an iconic duo. They, of course, they can go off and do their separate things, which and they must in many stories. But writing for them to me is like writing for Laurel and Hardy or Abbott and Costello, Martin and Lewis, like Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. They are like. They together, they are a character, and them rubbing, kind of coming together, like at loggerheads, like getting angry with each other. That is such an important part. Like when they're together, it's just such a fun thing to do, and but beyond Mordecai and Rigby, I'd have to say Benson is really fun to write because you can just like. Benson can just like where you can unleash everything, like all your frustration in life, you can just like put it in Benson's mouth. And oh boy, I mean, it's I'm afraid I'm gonna give you an answer all of them. Muscle Man is really fun to write, because he's just like unfettered id, He just like, you know, wants to party.
And you snuck a couple of my mom jokes into the book as well.
You have to. You have to. Like I said before, like, I want to put... I didn't know if this was going to be the only regular show thing I would ever really have be out there, so I had to throw everything I loved about the show as much as I can, throw it in there. So... And Skips, of course, is great because I just... Well, with all these characters, it's great because you write with them. You have a voice in your head to write for, and it's great. And with Skips, you know, just thinking that I was writing from something from Mark Hamill to read, that's like that was kind of a wonderful thing to think about. So yeah, so the whole crew.
And one thing when you mentioned Benson is one thing that the story kind of focuses on is Benson's past, and another part of his past is unraveled with him breaking his leg, literally breaking a leg on stage. But then it starts to get quite personal.
Yeah, Benson has Benson, like Walt Whitman, contains multitudes. Benson, like, he has anger at the world, and he is one of those people who just like just wants people to be competent and like stop messing around. But he's got Benson's actually like a really sensitive soul. He's got like a lot of like feeling with him. Like there's that the bit like in like I'll go back to the Christmas episode where he's talking about his sweater and stuff, and he's like you can see he's kind of hurt when people are kind of like putting down a sweater at the beginning because he's just like he wants to be festive, wants to be fun.
That's a Benson.
Hey.
The official Benson plush.
I love the expression on his face. It's such a Benson expression. It's great. Look at that. Just a few lines and boom, that's Benson. Just a few lines. It's great. The worried lines above and below his eyes. Excellent. That mouth that kind of love it. Let me go back to something about the show as a whole. Regular show is a raucous, goofy comedy, but it's very emotional. And at its core, it's a story about people, about a group of friends who actually really like each other. And they get frustrated with each other, like we all do with our group of friends, but they all really like each other. Like, Benson threatens to fire Mordecai Rigby all the time, but they always have their job back because it's a sitcom. You have to keep that cycle going. They always stick up for each other. They always have each other's back. And they like hanging out with each other. Even when they annoy each other, they like hanging out. That show is about friendship and it's about love. And I really like that level about it because you can enjoy it just as a goofball comedy. But there's a lot going on there. Like, you know, the characters get their hearts broken. They get into relationships. They get out of relationships. And some things don't work out for them. But they all still got each other's back. And, you know, I think Muscle Man and Starla is one of the great love stories. Because no matter what, they are devoted to each other. And nobody ever makes fun of Muscle Man for being so into his girlfriend. There's none of that. Like I mean, maybe Rigby probably has some like comments and stuff about it. But in the end, Muscle Man and Starla are one of the greatest couples because they just are so devoted to each other. They love each other so much. And it's never questioned. It's like it's never mocked. It's just like, yeah, that's what's up. That is what's up. And, you know, so, yeah.
I think you can't argue that they're not the healthiest couple in the whole of Regular Show.
Yeah, they really dig each other and they listen to each other. They really listen to each other. Like just hearing Muscle Man, like, you know, he's so supportive. You know, hey babe, you know, he's always like really supportive of her. So, you know, and I don't know, man. I really dig that about that. I really dig that about the show. As a whole.
So what would you say in terms of other media? Because you've spoken about how that inspires you to, in your writing. What media exactly has inspired you the most?
Well, you know, I am I am a, like, I hate even use the word consumer. I am an avid just reader and listener and watcher. I love cinema dearly. I am a huge movie buff and I love all cinema. I could talk to you about films from the 10s to now. And I love it all. There's lots of records right there. There are more records over there. There are more records down there. Hundreds, if not, you know, just like a lot of records. The books that you cannot see in here are, there's a lot of them, comic books. I've been a comic book fan since I was a kid. The Jimmy Olsen book that I just wrote, that was just released by DC Comics, was a culmination of a lifetime love of DC Comics. I love Marvel Comics as well, but DC is one of my favorite things in the world, and I was able to just like cram a lot of what I love about DC Comics into one book there. I'm an avid gamer. I love from a simple deck of cards, like, you know, like something like this, to big board games. I love cards. I am not a gambler at all, but I love playing cards. I love any sort of role-playing game. I love them for their ability to tell different types of stories. And I'm also just very much a, like, I've done a lot of, like, music writing in my life. I've written liner notes for, I wrote a liner note for a Grammy Award-winning record. I used to do a lot of music journalism. I used to do a lot of interviews and stuff with musicians. I played a lot of music. I still do play some music nowadays here in New Orleans. Just any form of storytelling, I just dig. And I'm constantly like at the library, getting new books, getting new movies, just trying to, I don't know, find something, trying to like get to the truth of something. And I just enjoy stories for them being stories. They don't necessarily have to be a revelation to me. I just love the fact that human beings tell these wonderful stories and that all of us keep... I think about this a lot. The state of the world gets me down a lot. I think about like the terrible things that human beings do to each other, the terrible, terrible politicians, the racism, etc., like transphobia, homophobia, fascism, all these awful, awful things that humanity cannot seem to rid itself of. At the same time, when I am looking for respite from those things, I turn to things that human beings make. I turn to stories. I turn to records. I turn to plays, comic books, games. And I'm constantly reminded that human beings can be pretty rad. We can be pretty awesome when we choose to be, when we choose not to like oppress other human beings. We can do some really great, great stuff. And I remind myself of that when I watch a movie that I love, I'm like, oh, human beings made this. Human beings acted in this. Human beings designed that set. Human beings directed this. Like, people came together and made something. Comic books, anything like that. It gives me hope. That sort of stuff gives me hope that humankind can, we can be such shits. But yet, humanity also gave us stuff like Studio Ghibli movies. Humanity gave us things like barbecue. Just tacos. Like bicycles. Awesome comic books. Dice. Playing cards. We can be so awesome. Like, you know, to paraphrase or just quote David Bowie, we could be heroes. Like, we could be.
That's quite fitting for regular show as well.
Yes. Yes. That ties in. Yes. So, I like to think about life that way. We could all be heroes. So.
And I feel like that's a good message to kind of spread right now as well. To support your creators, support the creative arts as much as you can. Because especially with certain technological things.
That's a whole nother conversation. Don't get me started. No AI, people. No AI. I don't want to see your goofy AI action figure shit. Part of my language. I don't want to like hear about your Chat GPT story. Like I your speaking of Studio Ghibli, I don't want to see your crappy Studio Ghibli AI thing you put in. Cut it out. Just cut it out. Stop it. No. Boo. Boo.
Just humanity wins.
Yeah, humanity wins. We can do this. We can do this, people. We no, thumbs up to that. We can do this. We can be heroes. So, yeah, regular show, baby.
So we've spoken briefly about how Regular Show is coming back. There's going to be a new series. With that, lots of fans are speculating whether this means. Especially with, as you've mentioned, Adventure Time getting new comics with Oni Press, and on whether all these things mean that potentially we could be getting new regular show expanded media as well. So my question is, if you were asked to come back and write another regular show book or to write a comic, would you go into doing it?
I would do that so fast. I would do it so fast. Yes. If by any chance there are there's an yeah, because nobody tells me nothing. Like that's I love that line in what's it, Hot Fuzz, you know, that comedian Bill, what's his name? Nobody tells me nothing. Anyway, that's besides the point. I don't know about any like any movements. Nobody tells me about the movements behind the scenes about some of this stuff. I would like to be privy to it. And if there was a regular show, new regular show comic in the offing, I would do goofy things to get hired to write for it. I have the CV for it, so come on, folks, hook a brother up. Not my first rodeo. Not my first rodeo. It'd be my third or fourth, which still, you know.
So I feel like we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but have you got any advice for people who want to enter the industry?
You know, my first jokey bit of advice would be don't do it. But if I said that and it stopped you, you weren't meant to do it anyway. It sucks. It's hard. It's a real uphill battle. You have tools at your disposal that allow you to make your own thing. Please make your own thing as often as you can. If you cannot draw, I don't want to hear about you doing any AI stuff. If you cannot draw, make some friends who can draw. Talk to people. Building good relationships is one of the main bits of advice I would give anybody who's trying to break in. If you're doing comics, you want to collaborate with people, you have to build relationships. Be a friend. Be supportive. Find a community. Seek it out. If you want to write prose, you know, just write it, write it, write it. Find somebody who can read it occasionally. Figure out how to like make a little zine if you, of your writing if you need to do it. Pay attention. Pay attention and listen to folks. Don't let people discourage you. There's a lot of folks out there trying to get that same piece of pie, but try not to look at it as try not to look at it like that. There's like somebody out there wants to read your story. Somebody out there does. It's hard to make a living doing this. I don't really. But I've survived many years doing it, and the key bit of advice I would give is just like, just don't despair. You will despair. That's inevitable. I felt it a lot, but don't sit with that feeling for a second, but release it and keep moving on. Just like I do, look around and realize everything you see, every bit of work you love has been made by a fallible human being. You probably had the same doubts that you have. I guarantee you, Stephen King is probably sitting there occasionally going, I suck. You know, Maybe not every day, but you know, it happens to him. Every book you read, every film you see, every bit of anything you consume, and there's that word again, I don't like that word, everything that you enjoy has been made by somebody who at some point utterly doubted themselves and thought they were nothing and thought it wasn't what they had to say wasn't worth saying. And you know, that's not true. Go for it. And one bit of advice I'd give you is find stuff you don't like. Find stuff you think is absolute garbage that's been published and out there, and just realize if that stuff can get published, you can at least write that garbage. Your shit doesn't have to be good, but you can at least do something on that level. So that actually gives me, when I see bad things, that actually sometimes inspires me more than good things. I'm like, oh God, if that happened, I can do it, you know? So that's my advice. A friend of mine once said to me, you know, he's describing like how things can change from day to day. It's like, you know, some days it's chicken salad and some days it's chicken shit. You know, like it's like,
Well, we're starting to head towards the end of the interview now. So I'd just like to ask, is there anything that you have done recently or that's maybe coming out in the near future that you'd like to promote?
hold on one second. First off, I'm gonna tell you about this book, Jimmy Olsen's Super Cyclopedia. It was released on April 1st, no fooling. It is a DC multiverse spanning graphic novel all about Superman's best pal, Jimmy Olsen. I made this book with my dear friend Sandy Jarrell, who worked on the Batman 66 series as like I did. I did a lot of writing for that. Sandy did a lot of art for that. And it's just like a gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous book. The writing, maybe it's okay, but it's a beautiful looking book and I'm very proud of it. So please get this if you like really fun comics. This book, Mega Ghost, this is a book that I do with my friend Gideon Kendall. This edition was just published by Dark Horse Comics, publishers of Hellboy, many other comics. And Giddy and I are currently working on volume 2 of Mega Ghost. And this is like a really kind of crazy, fun, like a supernatural kaiju, giant, possessed robot monster fighting thing. There's cursed rings, there's a haunted town, a lot of good stuff. Yeah, man. I am currently writing a couple books, which I don't think I can divulge the name of. Nothing licensed, but some new original stuff. One of them is a. I can be very vague and say it is a graphic novel that I have written with my buddy Steve Burns, who was the host of a children's television show called Blue's Clues. We wrote a graphic novel together. What it is has not been really talked about yet. We're not talking about it for a while. And the illustrator is a great guy named Jim Campbell, who did a lot of work for Over the Garden Wall comics and stuff. So that comic is going to be really, really, really fun. I have no idea when it's going to be released. I will not tell you what it is, but it's really cool. It's really cool. I'm seeing pages for it now, and it's really, really cool. And yeah, and I'm busy just trying to get other stuff done when I'm not doing great interviews like this.
And where can people find you if they want to learn more about those upcoming projects?
You know, I'm on social media. I'm on Blue Sky. It's Bitchinville. Bitchinville. You can look me up on Blue Sky or Instagram the same way. That's the only social media I do, and I feel guilty about doing both of those. Sometimes I think social media was an utter and complete mistake. So I am ambivalent about both. And yeah, but it's the world. I'm trying to promote books. I'm trying to sell these books. So there you go.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for speaking with us. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, I thank you. That was fantastic. You really made my day and probably my week. So thank you so much. And I don't know, just be well there near Manchester, wherever you are.
Thank you once again to Gabe Soria for joining us for this interview. Once again, make sure to check out Gabe's latest books and follow him on social media at Bitchinville if you want to learn more about his upcoming work. All links will be available in the description. Next time, we'll be speaking with Courtney Taylor, a voice actor who provided the voice of the one and only muscle woman, Starla. Here's a preview.
When Cartoon Network was no more, a lot of us got together when they were, it was like the last day that they were in the building, and I want to say like 200 of us, of like actors and animators and writers and everybody that made Cartoon Network, you know, run, showed up and did like a group photo. And it was like, it was literally like graduating from high school and then coming back to like homecoming or something and seeing all these people that you love from different shows. And it was such a cool place to work, to go in there and be able to see people that were making these shows. Like, it felt like college kind of, where you didn't know who you'd meet in the lobby, like while you were getting a soda, and everybody's excited to be there. And so it was really lovely to have that goodbye when they put it all together.